it's sort of part of the plan that I would land in Galatians chapter 6 this morning. We started in Galatians, if you're just stopping in this morning, Galatians is a book in the New Testament. It was originally written as a letter to a church in Galatia by the Apostle Paul. And as a church family, we've been studying it for a few weeks. There's six chapters, and today is the sixth time we've studied it. We're going to look at chapter 6. Now, if this has been your church family for a while, this will be the 13th time that I've preached to you on these two verses. Now, usually when preachers repeat themselves, there's a purpose, there's a point, there's a reason for that. Not always, sometimes we just repeat ourselves. But in this case, I've been repeating more or less the same sermon every year, at least once a year. And that's because I think there's something here in these verses I'd like to speak from this morning. Yes, for us as a church, Pemberton Community Church, for also for us as a culture, Canada, 21st century, I think there's something here that really captures, well, we'll get to it. There's a phrase at the end called the law of Christ, as if there's a way of really summarizing and solidifying all of what it means to follow Christ. And so I thought this would be quite an appropriate passage to listen to for the last time I preach here as your pastor. So here's what it says. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Some of you probably know, but for those who don't, the New Testament was written originally in Greek, Koine Greek. This letter included the letter to the Galatians. So we have translation, right, when we read an English Bible. Now the word beneath, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught, the Greek word beneath the English caught is paralambano. So there you go. You can go home and throw out a little New Testament Greek over lunch. You've learned paralambano. Caught. That's how we get it translated here. Now, the tricky thing about both the Greek, paralambano, and caught, the English, is it actually has two very different potential meanings. Both of them do. It's not a translation issue. So the Greek word can mean to overtake by surprise. You've been overtaken by surprise before, right? So, for example, we have a policy in the coming home, because we have just about three teenagers. Lord, help me. Three teenagers, so they all have their eye devices. And our policy in the home is around these devices, because, you know, if you don't have policies, it's just this all day long. All day long, right? So we got to come up with some way of moderating that somehow. One of them is no internet in your bedroom. No, and that includes these things, right? So, of course, I'm not going to name any names because I don't want to embarrass Mackenzie. But one point I came in, hey, Mackenzie, you know, I'm supposed to see your, it's bedtime, I'm supposed to see your phone out here in the kitchen where we charge them up. Where is it? Oh, I don't know. Okay, fine. Good night. Come back again later. Is it? And then I knock on her door again. Is it, by any chance, underneath your pillow? And she was caught, right? She was overtaken by surprise. She had been discovered in something that she was trying to keep hidden. She was caught. You've probably been caught in a similar way, right? But it's also possible to use the word caught in a completely different sense of the word. And it's also true in the Greek, because caught can mean to be overtaken by surprise as if by, like, some predator. In fact, in the there's a book of the Bible that's not often included in our books called Tobit, where this word, the exact same word, is used to describe how a lion handles its prey. That is also overtaken by surprise, right? The reason that Melanie and Joe and Ben aren't here this morning is that it's the big grade 7 final year camp out up at Birkenhead Lake. So I actually was there last night sleeping in the back of my truck and got up this morning and managed to make it here, but they're still just cleaning up all the mess. But I was there and I was talking with one of the park wardens, couple years ago, she's walking on the trail from the provincial park out toward the other end of the lake. There's a trail up there. And you've probably had this experience where you're walking along in the forest and you're enjoying yourself and you're thinking your thoughts and the sun is shining and everything's wonderful, but then, for no apparent reason, the little hairs in the back of your neck, right? You've had that experience? And things go tingly. Your spidey senses. You haven't seen anything, you haven't smelled anything, but something is telling you to pay attention and urgently. And this is the experience she had. And there was a large, full-grown cougar in a tree just ahead. And so she left the trail and went off through the forest, and the cougar thought, perfect. It's exactly what I was hoping for. Hopped down from the tree and followed her through the forest, and she headed down to the lake. I don't know if the cats don't like water thing applies to, you know, 400-pound cats, but she headed down to the water. And this story seems perhaps like it's got some sort of nasty graphic ending, but it doesn't. I mean, she would live to tell. I saw her this weekend. But that feeling of being pursued by a predator, right? It's also possible to be caught by a mountain lion. And it can mean that as well. And the question as we read this, what does it mean to be caught by sin? If church is your thing, if it's something you've been doing for a long time, as I have been when I've read this before studying it, I thought, oh, it means like, aha, I've caught you sinning. Like, you were trying to keep this secret, and now I've caught you with your hand in the cookie jar. Aha, like the phone under the pillow, you've been caught. Actually, now that I've looked at this more carefully, and now that I have a little more experience maybe with sin, I feel a lot more like the word caught should be taken completely differently than that. And it should be more like what Paul, I think, is meaning, is caught like as if caught by a mountain lion caught. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught by a sin, that is, if it has pounced and is gnawing on the back of their neck, caught, then this is what this passage is about. Before I continue, though, really, to do my preacher job, I should pause here and ask if you, right now, are caught in a sin. See, these are the sorts of things that we tend not to be asked very often. It's not polite conversation, right? Oh, how are things? Lovely day. How's sin in your life? Right? But you did deliberately, you know, on your own free will, come and show up at church on Sunday morning, and here you are. And so the preacher should, due diligence, ask you this very awkward question. Are you right now caught, entangled in something in your life? Sometimes God has this reputation for being a bit of a stickler, a bit of a, you know, clipboard in the sky guy who's just made up rules, who kind of makes life smaller with his rules, and that sin is just his checklist. Like, oh, I caught you doing the bad thing, and therefore I'm angry with you. But really, that's completely opposite to how the Bible describes God. That God is a loving father. And the rules, like, for example, if there was a 17-year-old girl listening this morning, like, her loving father makes the rules because he loves her. Okay? It's not completely arbitrary and for no reason whatsoever. It's actually so that we don't get tangled up and restricted by, you know, the iPhones or whatever else is the sin in your life. Of course, we're very good at keeping it secret, but that's not the question. It's, are you caught? And if so, you might need somebody to tell you that that is not a friendly kitty. It's following you down the path. You don't want to rub its belly, right? That's dangerous. That's going to make life painful and smaller in a hurry if you're caught in sin. Paul says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit, and we didn't get to it last week when we studied Galatians chapter 5, but one of the best parts of Galatians chapter 5 actually comes at the end, and I'd just like to read it now because we're talking about, Paul says, you who live by the Spirit, well, what does that mean? Well, at the end of 5, it says, but I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. He says, if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. And then later on, he says, if we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Paul's talking about God himself, God's Spirit, and keeping in step, or in the verse we have today, walking by the Spirit. I've told some of you this story before, but back, it was a while ago, just after Mackenzie was born, I used to actually run, as in on purpose, deliberately. Even if something wasn't chasing me, I used to run, you know, for exercise. And there was a place when we lived in Vancouver around Burnaby Lake, there was a trail, beautiful trail. I finally got to the point where I could run around it as opposed to just kind of running far and then pooping out and then coming back. But I actually got to make it around. And I was having a great time, but it was difficult for me. Not, you know, mechanically built to run, really. At one point, I'm running, and of course, there's always people passing me, but then I hear this coming up behind me, this little bit heavier footfall, and at a pace that's not much different than mine, but I can hear that this person is gaining on me. And I'm listening, and I'm thinking, oh, here comes some other great runner guy, and I'm going to let them pass me, and that's okay. But then this person gets into my peripheral vision, and I can see, now keep in mind, I was a younger man at the time, but I can see this is an old guy. Like, he's probably mid-40s, right? He's got the little bald patch, right? He's got the tube socks pulled all the way up to his knees. He's got the V-neck T-shirt with a little bit of fluff and the midlife medallion kind of bouncing along as he runs. And the headband. Anyway, you get the picture. And I look over and I think, there's no way I am going to let this guy pass me. So he gets a couple steps ahead of me, and I just make a choice to stay with him. So technically he was a couple steps ahead of me, but he didn't get away from me. That is to say, I kept in step with him, right? And there's something about the Christian life that just says, I'm not going to let this get away on me. Because it will, right? It will. Unless we deliberately, decisively choose to keep in step with the Spirit. I really think this is not an autopilot situation, friends, right? The life of faith requires a choice and a focus. I will live by, I will keep in step with the Spirit. One of my favorite verses in the New Testament is Hebrews chapter 12, I think it's verse 2 or 3. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. There's a lot of other mess in church and religion in general, right? And when things get messy or a bit discouraging, that's the verse for me. Right, it's about Him. And staying focused on Him and keeping in step with Him, being more like Him. And so Paul says, those who live by the Spirit, those who are close proximity to the Spirit, should restore the one who's caught in sin. Restore that person. But Paul says that there's a really important qualifying word with restore. You who live by the Spirit, restore them gently. Gently is important when someone is caught in a sin. Now, why is it why is gentleness important? Well, sin is dangerous. I mean, you think of it as a mountain lion, that's dangerous. Or as another example of a sin, perhaps not something you often think of, because sin sounds so religious-y, sort of. Think of drunk driving. If somebody drinks and then drives, very likely there will be consequences to that choice, right? Consequences with destructive effects on physically, but also relationally, making a person's life smaller, perhaps several people's lives smaller. And that's a dangerous situation, right? When somebody is caught in that kind of a sin, for example, and they follow through on those consequences. They need to be restored gently. I didn't know you guys were going to show up in your fancy uniforms, but I was going to tell a story of one of my first auto extrication calls with the fire department. And it was out by Walkerville, just past toward heading to Darcy. There's a couple little sharp, sneaky turns there, right? Really narrow spot in the road. And we came up in the old rescue truck, and the guy had sort of hit the concrete on one side, and it looked like anyway, and kind of gone up and rolled over. And this is the consequence, right? This is what happens when we get caught in something. rolled over, and we came there, and we set up the traffic control, and the car was condensed. And when somebody is entrapped in, I don't know, 5, 6, 8,000 pounds of twisted metal and rubber and plastic, and you need to get that person out, you might think, well, what we really need is big, strapping, handsome firefighters, right? Yeah. Right? And you want somebody with muscles and tools and red trucks and sirens. And actually what you really want, if you're the person in that car and you're caught in that car, you know what you really want? You want somebody who's gentle. Because that is a very dangerous and painful situation to be caught and trapped and tangled up in all that. So next time you see a firefighter, I want you to think, not handsome, not dashing, not wow, ooh, ah, you just think gentle. These guys are gentle. And that's exactly the best thing for the person that's caught. That's the point here, by the way, right? And in this case, this guy had gone over and we got our tools out and we peeled the door back and we used the hydraulic ram to stretch open it was the passenger side because he was upside down in the driver's side. And as we started to pull him out, we got the board and we, you know, tried to pay attention to his spine. I realized that there was a Budweiser in the cup holder. And there was a couple empty ones in the back seat. Realizing this as we're getting this guy out, and it starts to occur to me that, you know, what's happened here. And it occurs to me that my wife and my three kids drive this exact same road at least twice a day. And this was in the middle of the day. And as we're pulling him out, I had a very strong urge, because he's conscious. He's looking at me. He's not comfortable, but he's conscious. I had a very strong urge to punch him straight in the face. Now, I'm a Mennonite pastor, and we're not supposed to punch people, but I hope you understand. I hope you understand where that came from, right? Because this person had made a choice which had consequences, and in this case, he just hurt himself very badly and nobody else, but you could see where my mind was going, right? It's very tempting as followers of Christ when we're dealing with one another when we're caught in sin to have that sort of moral superiority when we approach somebody who's caught. And it's not quite a punch in the face, but have you ever been dealt with by a Christian who figures they're the hero here, and I'm going to come in and tell you what's wrong with your life and give you a little moral slapping around? And isn't that exactly the last thing that you need in that situation? And I personally wonder about how many spiritual casualties the church has suffered because of Christians who've behaved that way in that kind of a situation. When really what we need, the Apostle Paul knows what we need. Brothers and sisters, when someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit, restore them gently. Be gentle. And church, as I prepare to make my graceful exit from your life and your church family, I want to be very clear about this. As you deal with one another, for Christ's sake, be gentle. I do also want to say that gentleness doesn't necessarily mean niceness. It doesn't mean, you know, a hug and some Kenny G in the background, right? Because really, if you imagine that car accident scene, the person doesn't need a hug, right? They don't need somebody telling them nice things about how their hair looks or making small talk. They need somebody to get in there gently and rescue. And as Christians, we sometimes get the sense that, well, being a Christian really is about being just super nice. But that's not the point here, church, okay? Because gentleness often requires courage in some very difficult situations. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, of all people, would know that. So he says, be gentle. And then he goes on. He says, but watch yourself. Those who live by the Spirit, restore that person gently. But watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. Tempted. But he doesn't say tempted to what. He just says, watch out. It's like the person says, watch out, but doesn't explain what you're supposed to watch out for. What are we potentially tempted by, Paul? Well, there's a couple possibilities. One is whatever the same sin is that the person is caught in. So it's a dangerous situation, and watch yourself as you go into that situation, because you also could be could be caught. Like, if you're going to rescue somebody who's being, you know, eaten by a mountain lion, you might want to be careful in case the lion's still hungry after, you know, the first course. Watch yourself, right? Or the other possibility is pride. That's what I think is going on here. Because if you've ever been in a situation where you're helping somebody, there's a little voice in the back of your head that says, man, you are so awesome for doing this, right? You should get a cape. It's the pride that comes from that situation. Because this person is tangled up and caught and in pain, and you are there to help and restore and recover. So watch yourself, Paul says. I think he's talking about watch yourself because of pride. He says even just a verse or two later, he says, if anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. I think pride is this feeling, and you, if you haven't been here for the last couple of weeks, you won't get this, but it's this feeling that our skybala doesn't stink, right? That I've got my own self-righteousness, and it just smells like roses. And that's what Paul is saying. Please watch out for that, or you also may be tempted. And then Paul says, carry each other's burdens. Carry each other's burdens. I think this is one of the reasons why I keep coming back to this passage every year, that we live in a culture, a society, a day and age in which everything about, since when we're young, we're raised to be independent, self-sufficient, right? We're raised to believe, once we become adults, that being an adult means that I no longer need others. I can look after myself. That's so basic to our culture, that this idea that I might need somebody to carry my burdens, that would be a flaw in my character if I was in a situation like that. There's something diametrically at odds or opposed to how our culture has raised us to believe and what following Christ means. To follow Christ means we live in such a way as your burdens are mine and mine are yours. That we look at each other's burdens not as, oh gee, I'm glad I don't have Rich's problems. But I look at Rich and think, man, I'm glad I've got Rich on my side because this is heavy. That we carry each other's burdens. James Houston, who was a mentor of mine 20 years ago now, he says, when we live in our own strengths and abilities, we are practicing atheism. And I believe that's true. When we live as if it's all I can look after myself, and it's all up to my own strengths and my own abilities, we are practicing atheism. And Paul says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. The law of Christ. Now, church, we've been studying this for a few weeks, and we know that the word law is huge in Galatians, right? The whole point of Galatians is he's got some people coming into this little church while Paul's away, and they're saying, here are the laws. Here's the law. If you want to be accepted by God's people, if you want to be able to be real in God's presence, then you need to observe these laws. And Paul is writing to the church in Galatians saying, that's not the way this works. It's not about being in or out. It's not about God's love being exclusive to just a few anymore, Paul is saying. And he uses the word law to summarize what these teachers are telling his church and reject that. And now at the end of the letter, he's using that same word, but now in connection to Christ, this is huge. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. I used to focus on this passage, the first probably few years I preached it, as a way of saying, all right, you know, Daryl, you've got to pay attention to Mark's problems, and John, you've got to pay attention to my problems, as if it was a way of encouraging us as a church to carry other people's problems and burdens. And that's definitely part of what this is saying. But I'd like us to see that actually most of us are pretty good people, with a couple exceptions in the back row there, but most of us are really nice, good people, right? And most of us, if you knew that I had a burden, a problem, or any of us, we would be like, I want to help. And in, this is what Paul is saying. You need to be ready to help others with their burdens and their problems. But there's more to it here for us, I think, church. Because none of us are going to be able to carry others' burdens if none of us others admit that we even have burdens in the first place. This is the problem, right? How am I supposed to get you to help me with my problems and my burdens if I never admit to having problems or burdens? And vice versa. If everything is always okay, and we put on the smile, and we say and pretend as if everything's always okay, well, there's not going to be much burden carrying going on. I think this is the main obstacle for you and I today, that we need to get to a place where we're comfortable admitting, I need some help with this. And why is it that that's so difficult for us? I don't know. I wish I could crack this one. I think it has something to do with shame. That for some reason we are ashamed of having a burden or needing help from others. I don't know quite how or why that connection is there, but I think that's part of it. That if I have to call Daryl up and say, Daryl, here's the situation in my marriage, or I'm confused about how to deal with my 17-year-old. Sorry, I keep bringing you up. Or whatever it might be, right? Is there some sense of shame because I need help from a brother or a friend? Problem is, if I've been hurt before, or if I've been burned. So say I've got history with, and I'll pick on Daryl, right? And in the past, maybe I told him something that I needed some help with, and it didn't go well, and it got burnt, right? Maybe he posted it on Facebook or something, right? Well, that would probably stick in the memory a bit, right? And then I would think, yeah, I've worked through that, and I need some help now again, and I think, I'm not sure I really want to reach out again, because last time I did that, it did not go well. And if we were to be honest with each other, anyone in this room who's an adult has had something like that experience, where we've relied on somebody, we've needed help from somebody else, and it did not go well. In some way, shape, or form, multiple ways, shapes, or forms, we've been burnt in our vulnerability with others in the past. And that sticks. And therefore, when we come to needing help and needing to admit that we have a burden that we need some help with from others, there's something there that says, no, don't do it. Don't ask for that help. Don't admit you have that burden. Because remember A, B, C, D, and all these times in the past. And it makes good sense, in a way, to protect ourselves from harm. And yet, the problem is, Brené Brown, who's a favorite author of mine, she says that we can't selectively numb ourselves. Which is to say, I'd love to just shut off the parts of me that is open to being hurt, but keep open the parts of me that's open to joy and love and happiness. We can't do that. If you shut down the part that exposes us, that makes us vulnerable to potential risk and harm and hurt, we are also shutting down the part of us that is how we receive joy, how we receive love, and how our lives become full and abundant. So those burdens and pains and shames from the past, if we let them shape how willing we are to be vulnerable with others, they actually end up closing our lives down dangerously. And I personally believe that, in a way, that's the story of Jesus. That in Jesus we see God himself being vulnerable with those he loves. You think about it, right? That God would become human, incarnate, in the messiness of all that it means to be human. That God himself would become incarnate and live in such a way that put him in lethal odds with the most powerful force on the planet at the time, that God himself would become incarnate and opposed by Rome and the religious authorities and then be crucified. It means that God, in his love, chose to be that vulnerable to all that mess and risk for your sake and mine. But that's what we see in Jesus. Absolutely vulnerable love for you and I and the world, as John says. Jesus said, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest." It would be nice if the way Jesus did that was just like, when you get an electronic transfer, you just accept the transfer, and it opens up the app, the Jesus app or something, and it just downloads into your life, or maybe uploads all your burdens, and there it's gone. He said it. All you who labor and are heavy burdened, and he will... Couldn't we just double tap that and have it done, me and Jesus? I don't think that's the way it works, church. That the way that Jesus gives us rest, the way that he takes our burdens, is through the law of Christ. That is, that we, his body, his church, would carry each other's burdens. And that is Christ himself fulfilling that promise that he will give us rest. So the law of Christ, Pemberton Community Church, is that we love each other gently, shamelessly, and courageously. And may God help us. Amen. Thank you, Father, for this church. Thank you for the joy it is to be brothers and sisters and friends and community gathered here together. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. So we're going to share communion now. Musicians can come up if you like, and maybe a couple ushers.